Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
What's up, guys? Welcome to the sesh. Today, I got a special guest, Shavi. Please introduce yourself, tell everybody what you do.
Hey, I'm Shavi Mitani. I'm a real estate developer. Do land development, commercial development, tinker around in a little bit of a few different sectors of the real estate world.
And investing mostly, right?
Investing, yeah, that's right.
So when I ran across you the first time, Eddie said that you were his mentor. And I was oh shit. I never find people talking about mentors, like ever. I search for mentors like up and down. And what I found is that most of them are just busy. Like most of them busy. They can't take time to take you under the wing. Right. Cause I get it. It's fine, man. Yeah. Business. You're running a business. But do you see that as well? Like, do you see that there's a lack of mentors everywhere, anywhere?
You know, I think it's finding somebody that you're close to and that you respect and that knows whatever the business they're in. And so sometimes, you know, I had a mentor growing up. It was a relative of mine, but it's whoever you get close to and that takes you under their wing. So I think there's a good amount of mentors out there.
Do you have mentors now?
Do I have mentors?
Or like peers that you...
No, not necessarily anymore, but I do have people that look to me for advice.
Okay.
So maybe I'm a little bit of a mentor to some, and it's making, you know, you're right about time, making time and stuff like that. Not everybody has time, but sometimes you just have to make time for the younger people because a lot of people are looking for guidance.
Yeah.
And I've met with some people that have just anonymously wanted to come meet me and said, come on over and giving them advice, you know.
When you're talking about within the industry.
Within the industry or outside of the industry. I gotcha. Just some people have business questions and, you know, just need certain guidance. So you give them, or business guidance rather. You know?
Okay. Well, let's.
Not personal. Yeah. Personal guidance, I'm terrible. Yeah,
nobody
at, right?
got that under control, man. Let's talk about specifically your beginning. Like I heard that you started in the e-commerce space, right?
No. I actually, when I graduated high school, I knew I wanted to be in business, but I didn't have the wherewithal, the money or anything to go start a business. I was working for a cousin of mine in downtown and getting the old school education of what it takes to buy a product for a dollar and sell it for $2, $3, you know, $1.50.
Arbitrage.
Yeah. That's retail is the quickest way to make quick cash. Right. Mm-hmm. So I was getting that down. And so my very first business, I was about 19 years old and it was a little watch stand in the mall, like about double the size of this table. And so I was selling watches there in the mall. That was my very first business.
And 19 years old.
I was about 19 years old. Mm-hmm. Actually, before that, I gained a little bit of cash. I was going to the flea market to sell the same watches because I worked for my cousin downtown. He was selling me the watches on credit. So whatever I sell, I go back, pay him, and I keep a little bit of the profit. And then you go from one, and I went to the little watch stand. And then from that, you know, I spun off a couple of other businesses. An ice cream business, and then, you know, before you know it, I'm rolling. You're getting a little bit of cash flow, and you're spinning off next business to the next business. So that was the early roots of how I got started.
Okay. And when you jumped to these next businesses, once you had some cash in your pocket, like, what were you thinking? Were you just, like, figuring, like, I would just want to go into something else that's going to multiply this income, or how does that work? Like, what were you thinking at that time?
You know, you kind of start thinking it's a snowball effect. You want to make, at that age, you want to make
as much as humanly possible,
right?
Okay.
You hit your goal of 10,000. Making the next 10,000 is so much easier. And just throwing a number out there. Before, maybe the goal was 100,000. Mm-hmm. Make 100, the next 100 was a lot easier to accomplish. So right then, you're very numbers-oriented, very numbers-driven. I want to hit this number. Hit that number, okay, the next one. And then you're saying, what can I do to get there? And then, well, how can I get this snowball going faster? Retail is not going to do it on its own. I had multiple, and I knew I needed to take the next step. So, you know, in the next step, I had multiple, couple watch stores, a little cell phone store. So the next step was real estate. The numbers multiply quite a bit there. I mean, you get into those bigger numbers, you know, and you're growing faster.
So what was it that got you into real estate?
Like I mentioned, I had a cell phone business. And so I was a tenant. My background was I was leasing. I was a tenant. Simon Properties forever. Mm-hmm. Every month I'd cut the check. I'd hate it. So one day I want to own my own, right? I don't want to always be cutting the check. I don't want to be collecting. Getting I want to be the opposite side of this. I want to be collecting the check. So I was very retail focused. I had a retail mentality. That's why if you notice, I'm mainly in the retail sector of commercial real estate.
Yeah.
Because I understand it.
Well, the numbers are way bigger too.
Well, I mean, there's commercial, there's other sectors. I mean, there's an office and there's other sectors of it too. So, but I understand the retail sector of commercial real estate. And so, yeah, I was, and then I got into the cell phone business. And then in the cell phone business, I was in one of these strip centers. And I kept bugging the guy to sell me that, my one suite. And he said, I can't sell you this, the space. You buy it, you buy the whole thing. And I think I eventually just wore him down after a year of asking him every month. He finally said, you know what? Here's my number. Here's what it is. This, you want to buy it? You can buy the whole thing. This is how much it is. And I studied it and I was like, you know what? Let's just roll the dice. Huh. And so it worked out. It ended up being a good deal and ended up being the smart move.
And that was your first real estate deal?
That was my first real estate deal, is buy something already built, income producing, generating, you know, it was a quick plug and play. Mm-hmm. I've got in and you're generating cash already. You're generating some income.
When you thought about that, when you had to reframe your mindset about real estate, well, obviously you took a leap of faith there. Like, was going to cost a significantly amount more of money, right?
I did. And I, you know, I'm reviewing the numbers and I'm scared and I'm saying, I wish I could bounce this off of somebody, and I don't. I don't know who to ask, so I'm just gonna have to roll the dice. It felt like a gamble at the time. Now looking back, it'd be like, that's
that was the best decision ever.
Yeah, you know, now I could just analyze deals like very quickly and say, okay, that's a good deal or not. So
interesting. When I barely learned about the concept of multiplying your money and your wealth a few years ago, and it happened to be with Bitcoin. Like, I dollar costed average at the height of the 2020 era, and I just happened to get lucky. I was like, I didn't even know what I was doing. And I looked back at my portfolio, I was like, oh shit, this is like significantly higher than it was. Yeah. I just jumped into it, happenstance, you know? And I get it. Like, you have to figure out how to multiply your money and your wealth. Otherwise, you're going to stay stuck working a job. Like for me, I found that I have a income producing job that I get paid every single month. The cash flow is coming in. And for me, the best way to multiply the wealth is to stuff it into Bitcoin. It's a very volatile asset.
You don't see it as a risk?
No, I don't. I don't see it as a risk because I feel at this point, I'm too far behind to learn real estate, I feel. Like, I never jumped into real estate, so I never made the investment in learning it, investing in it. So at this point, I knew Bitcoin pretty well, and I just continued to learn it a little bit more. So I feel for me, it's not the most riskiest, because in the space of Bitcoin, it is the most conservative bet to make, I feel.
But there's ups and downs.
Absolutely.
In real estate, in Bitcoin. So what do when you have, you're in a down market? Are you still holding?
I'm holding. I hold it as a long-term hold. I will hold Bitcoin probably for the next year and a half, and then I'll reevaluate if I'm going to take some off the top or let it go for the next 10 years. I feel this is a long-term hold. I don't know. I'm not familiar with real estate, how long you hold real estate. So that's why I wanted to have this conversation with you. It's like, am I investing in the right thing? I feel I am.
You know, I think there's parallels in real estate and Bitcoin. You don't just have a straight ascend up, right? You're going to have down cycles. You're going to have up cycles. And in Bitcoin, yeah, you want to sell in the up cycle maybe. Real estate and Bitcoin, you hold for the long term, and you're hoping that, you know, in 2, 3, 5 years from now, the value of your coin or your real estate, your property, is worth well more than what you bought it for.
Right? Yeah.
So, but real estate's one of the oldest businesses around Bitcoin is so fresh and new. I don't know if we really know what it's going to do in 2, 5, 10 years from now.
Yeah, and I think I'm probably at that same point that you were at when you were first thinking about that first investment in that big real estate. Like, should I invest in this? And I just decided, you know what? Fuck it. I'm going to go. I'm going to just invest everything I possibly can after bills, after everything, you know, after everything's taken care of, the family and bills and all that stuff. I was like, I'm just going to stuff it in there and hope for the best.
Yeah.
But the cool thing about it is, I mean, I'm learning. I'm getting an education on Bitcoin because I want to know exactly what I'm putting my money into. So I follow it every day, which I'm sure you follow real estate every single day as well.
Yeah, I do. And it goes back to that saying, I think it's Malcolm Gladwell, says 10,000 hours of something that equates to maybe, what, 10, 12 years?
Yeah.
So, you know, it took me at least 10, 12 years where I hit a aha moment in real estate and said, okay, I'm starting to understand this now. I don't fully have a grasp on everything, but I'm starting to get this. So it takes a while of doing something. In real estate, it's a big pie. People talk about real estate.
Mm-hmm.
There's so many different slices of that pie. There's commercial, there's land development, there's multifamily. There's, you know, you could just slice it. There's people that are just in the leasing game. People just in the fourplex game. There's town, you know, you could slice that pie in so many different. So it's getting good at a few different things. Sometimes it just takes being good at one of those sectors, right? To really get good at it. So
yeah,
but it takes a while to really get an understanding of the business.
So when you're talking about this new venture that you have, which was a $120 million venture.
It's a little over 100. We're doing that development there on 10th and Auburn. There's a few different phases to that development. One of the phases will encompass a 5-story building, which will have retail below, retail on the first floor, retail and some restaurant on the second floor, and then office space on 3, 4, 5. There'll be pad sites in the front with restaurants and things like that. Mainly restaurant, quick service users. And then there will be a building that has, also in the second phase of commercial, there will be a building with some green space with a bunch of restaurants around it.
Okay.
That's 'cause something like when you go to the Pearl in San Antonio, they have a food hall, so we'll be more restaurant-based or like the Domain. So it's bringing, and then behind that, there will be another phase, which is multifamily.
Okay.
220-unit apartment complex. I'm building it as the highest-end apartment complex in South Texas.
Nice.
I'm trying to achieve. We hired an architect out of Dallas. Told them we want something that really accomplishes a look and feel that you're in Dallas or you're in Austin. I want to really elevate the bar and try to bring higher-end products down here. Yeah.
When I've been looking around the Rio Grande Valley, there's a ton of development everywhere. It's quite fascinating to see. And then I see your area there too. I was like, wow, this is gonna be awesome, man. So what are you seeing behind the scenes when you're doing like your market research? Like these people that are gonna be moving into these residential places there, and these restaurants that are gonna be coming in. Like what are those conversations sounding like, or what are you thinking of?
You know, we have a little bit of insight because already have, you know, quite a few strip centers on the ground here. So we get to talk to people that are already tenants of ours that say, hey, we want to be there. So we have a little bit of inside knowledge on who's growing, what's going on in the market. So, you know, that really helps us in that regard with this development. Because a portion of that, the food park area, I call it, is going to be more local users. There'll be other national users there in that development, but that little part, I want to help cultivate some of our local restaurants, right? Mm-hmm. We're really going for that kind of cool feel to the overall development.
Yeah. So, what's interesting over the past 2 years that I've been watching, especially because I've been getting into AI a lot, quite a bit, I saw that Facebook, LinkedIn, and Citigroup have I've almost gotten rid of 20,000 employees over the past 2 years, and they've replaced them with AI. And that got me thinking. I was like, shit, like, this is coming fast, man. I think I remember when I first got into ChatGPT in last January, I stayed in it for like 2 to 3 hours a day, just learning how to interact with it. And then come along now is like, you're seeing these big, huge institutions, these companies get rid of this many people. And that just proves that you can make like $100 million business with a very small team. Like, what are your thoughts on that?
You know, I hired a architect not too long ago to do some plans for some townhome project that we're working on. And she brought them over to me. Here's the plans. I had AI do it. She told me I had AI draw up these plans. I was like, if you had AI do this, what do I need you for? Right?
Yeah.
That was the first thing that crossed my mind.
Well, it's interesting because I've always thought that too. It's like, it's not the AI that's going to take the jobs of people. It's going to be people that know how to use the AI that are going to take the jobs of people.
Yeah.
So it's an interesting thing.
I don't know the full potential of AI. I just know some of the things that it can do is pretty mind-blowing.
Yeah. And we're just at the
we're at the very tip of the iceberg with this.
It's crazy.
Right?
And I started studying. I got into this certificate program with UTRGV. I'm just taking the course for emerging technology because, like, it's coming, man. Like, I can see, like, the Rio Grande Valley is posed to have so much growth in the next 5-10 years. Like, what do you see in the next 5 to 10 years with real estate and commercial and residential?
People here are anxious. They're really excited about new products and things that we haven't had here. We're getting a lot of stuff now. If you think about it, a lot of things we're getting or we have now, the gap between us and a bigger city is closing, right?
Yeah.
And our population really rushes to these new products whenever they come down. They support it. And I think they're starting to see the potential for South Texas. A lot of the brands are seeing that potential.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. Because I've seen, like, you know how the Valley was always like 1 to 5 years behind in everything? Well, that gap is
I think we're closer to 10 to 15 years behind. Now we're probably like 5 years. We're not that far. We're getting a lot more brands than before.
Yeah, and I saw that the White House is going to connect everybody in America by the year 2030. So that digital divide is going to be closed. So they're supposed to connect every American to the internet. And I think that's a fascinating thing because if you think about it, the Rio Grande Valley, specifically Hidalgo County, they've already invested over, like, I think it's like $350 million on the infrastructure for the internet, specifically here in Hidalgo County. It's going to be interesting to see, like, the digitization of business here in Hidalgo County coming up. Like, what technologies are you all using in your real estate?
Real estate's a very old school business, but we do have...
Well, you got it. Right?
We do have some tools, but there's so many tools that are accessible now for real estate management and sales. You know, we do use Salesforce. We use a different real estate management for our properties and things like that. But but it's so accessible now to get a lot of these tools that weren't available just a handful of years ago. Obviously, our marketing is all done. Majority of our marketing is just on social media.
Yeah,
I don't think we do any traditional media at all.
Wow. Kind of touch on that because that's fascinating because that's the world I'm from and I'm always pitching like use social media. It's cheap because you think about it, like everybody's on their phone, especially if your customers are from the Rio Grande Valley. They're on Facebook and Instagram. I don't care what people say. I can find them. I found them. I've proven it over and over and over again. Like, you don't really need to go to TikTok, especially if you're running advertising in the Rio Grande Valley. Like, your customers are here. Everybody's on social media on Facebook. It's crazy.
I remember a handful of years ago, I saw that as a flaw in my business. Said we barely have any social media presence. I started watching Gary Vee, and that's all he kept talking about. That's all he kept talking about. I was like, shit, I need to do something. Like, hey, I actually had dinner with that guy too, and he just had tons of knowledge. So we made a big push, and we're doing much better at it today than we were. We could always improve, right?
Yeah.
There's room improvement, but the amount of social media marketing, it's amazing how many people you can reach.
Yeah. And inexpensively. Yeah. I don't think business owners really understand that because if I've done advertising in the Rio Grande Valley since 2016, and still there's very few people that are using social media advertising. They have the idea that content marketing Oh, I'm sorry, you're going to say something?
But is social media really for the higher income demographic?
I think so. I think you can sell $1 million property.
About not everybody has connectivity here.
Yeah.
When everybody does have connectivity, okay, then maybe change it because you see some, you know, maybe some markets that target the lower income demographic that still go with the print or TV.
Yeah.
I mean, TV's great, but...
It's expensive.
I usually fast forward. I don't really watch too much live. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. The difference between social media advertising that it's invasive. So you're popping up in somebody's screen when you're scrolling. So, you know, it's interesting to see like Google is more intent based where you're searching for something. Then the ad pops up based off of what you're looking at on Facebook or Instagram. Like you're targeting your demographic that would be interested in this. So your ad pops up in their feed, which is kind of cool because I mean, people need to know about marketing and advertising is just to be known, right? I think more people that are known, more business that is known, the more customers you're going to get. I think people grossly underestimate how many people you really need to reach in order to get like a sale and then do it consistently.
One thing I did learn about commercial real estate is that it's not just the eyeballs. It's the quality of eyeballs. There was a piece of property that I purchased. This is a while back. It was 5 acres. It was on the market for at least six years. I put it under contract. From the moment I put it under contract, and real estate is one of these things where you could do this. You could put it under contract, and I had a plan to go split it up into 5 different acre tracts. Before I closed on it, I had 3 of those other acre tracts already sold to other people. So, but it wasn't the sign that was on the property for years. Really didn't do them much good because it was the contacts.
Yeah.
And that's what commercial real estate is. I picked up the phone, called a handful of people, and before I knew it, 3 of those tracks were under, you know, they were already pretty much committed to.
Wow. So the networking is a huge part of the commercial real estate.
You know, eyeballs is great for branding your name, but as far as in the commercial real estate world, it's about contacts. It's about calling the person, doing it the old school way, right?
I don't think that'll ever go away.
No, that won't ever go away.
Yeah, definitely not. The knowing how to shake hands and have a conversation, I think, is a lost skill.
And you know what? On another note, people are so intent on doing things online now. Mm-hmm. Like sometimes my staff will just I sent an email. I was like, I didn't tell you to send an email. Like call. Sometimes you have to call. Yeah. Like pick up the phone and don't do it the easy way. Like sometimes you have to interact. You know, people want that.
Yeah. You're absolutely right. From what I've seen, especially too, is like you can only go so far with like a personal brand. Like for example, like the only way you can make a personal brand, powerful personal brand, is to be able to give education and information or entertainment. Any of the three, right? But also, at the end of the day, you still have to shake hands with the business owner that you're going to do business with.
So don't overcorrect and be too digital, right? You gotta balance in that.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. So let's talk about the criteria that you have to go through when you're looking at real estate specifically. Like, what's going through your head when you saw over here on North 10th? Like, what's going through your head that I can make this into something like in Dallas?
You know, one thing that I saw about that property that not everybody else saw physically, is that I knew it was a quarter mile collector and there was a road that was supposed to be punched through there. You had Auburn going through there. Mm-hmm. It was in the long-term plan. So I studied the area. I look at where the roads are going to go. I knew there was going to be a quarter mile collector going through there and it was going to be a corner property, both tracks. So that really made it interesting to me. So sometimes you got to really study the lay of the land and what's going to happen. Not today, but what's going to happen in 2-3 years from now to that property, how that affects it. You know, if a street widens, if it becomes a corner, all those things change it, right? If there's a school going across the street, you know. So sometimes you're kind of betting on the come, right? And so I knew that about the property, so I tied up, started the development on the first section, which you have places like Howling Rabbit, Umbra and stuff like that. And that's been, you know, some of those tenants have been wildly successful. And I knew there was a need in North McAllen for, you know, it seems like I live here in North McAllen. We're losing all these great businesses to South McAllen. Oh, why? Everybody's going to, it was like, we need to spur some activity up over here. So, you know, and that it was kind of bet right on that because some of these guys are doing great.
So. And when you're thinking about that too, is like does the price of like housing and the income of people in that area have a lot to do with it too?
That was a very unique area because you have all the shopping right across the street, mm-hmm. and it does help having the Target there, the HEB, the Sam's. That helps bring a lot of the traffic, right?
Yeah.
So it's without a doubt the income demographic helped that area as well.
Yeah. When you're having conversations with like banks or financing, and you're saying that you want a $120 million to bring over here, like what do those conversations sound like?
You know, first you got to do it on paper and see if it even makes sense what you tell these, what you ask for. You got to put stuff, you got to put your plan on paper and have some sort of plan in place and say, okay, this is what I'm planning on doing. This is the budget, so what this is going to cost. You know, the fixed one is the land. Over the last few years, the construction cost was just all over the place. It was so hard. Some of my shopping centers were within 2 years. The price of it increased by 50%.
Wow.
What we were anticipating building for, I had to go back to the bank and say, hey,
wow,
I need more money. But a lot of them understood. And, you know, it was just the times. That's what was happening. Some of them, you know, we just funded the additional balances and just kept going. But, I think it all comes down to if it makes sense on paper, it'll make sense to them.
Right, yeah.
A bank will see it's a good project. And when you have a track record, if you do one successful, you have the second one successful, the bank starts to believe in you if you have a track record.
I got you.
Going in there and saying, this is my first project, I want a big loan.
Yeah.
But first and foremost, it's got to make sense on paper.
I got you. And how long did that process take for you for like the first, this is your third huge project or what is...
Well, I have
multiple actually.
30 strip centers. So
all across the Rio Grande Valley.
All across, mainly Hidalgo County.
Okay.
So 30 strip centers. We've done about 24 subdivisions, something like that.
Wow.
We've done quite a few subdivisions.
So when you go into the bank, they listen. mostly.
I hope so. So, I mean, we have a track record that helps, and the things that we do. Before I even take it to the bank, I got to make sure it makes sense. We'll do the full feasibility study and say, okay, is this something that works? Does it work for us? You know, so before we even take it there, it'll be filtered out.
I got you. Okay. There's a startling statistic that I read the other day is that 10 to 12 million businesses will close every single year. What can businesses do to like weather that storm?
What percentage?
10 to 12 million businesses will close every year in America.
And what percentage is that? That seems like a big number.
That is a big number. I remember looking at that too, and I was like, that's significant, because I was in Phoenix, Arizona at a conference, and I went next door to a plaza, and about 90% of that, it was a huge plaza, beautiful plaza, 90% of that was empty. Wow. And I was like, whoa, shit, like, this is Phoenix, Arizona. This is a big-ass city. Like, there's a ton of people here. And then I started to believe that statistic, and I started looking into it. I was like, shit, that's a lot of businesses that will close every single year. Like, from your knowledge, like, what can businesses do to help weather that, or how do they get out of that or stay relevant?
That's a tough question, man. Every business is so different, and it comes down to the business owner. That one's a hard one to answer.
Yeah. Well, I mean, cause I watched a podcast of yours, and you're talking about like, just going through it, like going at it, and no matter what, like, you don't give up. Like, I think that's sound advice, but how does a business owner do that when like their money is drying up?
You know, the first year of any business is always the hardest. So once you get established, you get a little bit more idea of what it is that you're doing. It gets easier. There's always challenges in businesses. It's just sticking to it and just grinding every day, showing up and putting in the effort, right?
Yeah, I think a lot of people won't put in that consistent effort like every day in, day out, because entrepreneurship is hard, man. It's like you get up and you get punched in the face one day.
It's rewarding yet challenging.
Right, yeah. Like, for what advice would you give some entrepreneurs that are out there that are starting, that barely starting, and that are already at some point where they're like getting some success? What's the next steps?
Get obsessed with what you do. It doesn't matter what you do, whether you're in marketing, real estate, whatever it is, just study it and get to know your business better than anybody else. Just, you know, sometimes I'll be up at night still just looking at different real estate. And this is like 11, 12 a.m. I'm just looking around, seeing what's there. I'm obsessed with what I do.
Yeah.
And I think that gives me an edge over other people.
And you get to take unique opportunities, too, because if you're obsessed and you're in it all the time, you see things that most people don't, that'll just glance over it, and like you're over it and over and over it again, right?
Yep, that's right. And when you start doing it so much, you get a good understanding of it. You get a good feel.
Yeah. When did you learn that self-discovery? Like, when you have to learn, like, your personal growth and development, like, when did you know that that was something that you needed to do?
What's up?
Like your personal development, like I got to go and learn new things all the time. I got to be on the top of my game. Like when
you know, I still have a long way to learn. I think there's still a long way for me to go. You never stop learning, but I can tell you when I first bought my first strip center, it was a big question mark whether I should do it. And when I did it, I think it was a big aha moment and saying, okay, I feel much more confident about my business abilities than I did doing all this other stuff, and I was just kind of grinding and hustling. So having something there with worth and value under my belt made me feel more accomplished personally.
And that I would attribute that to the money factor, right? Because if you're having business and you're multiplying your wealth by substantially quite a bit amount, then you're like, oh shit, like this is how the game is played, because you play with bigger numbers, get bigger results. Can you kind of touch on that?
Which part?
I feel like for me, if I were to invest $100 in Bitcoin like today and then next week at some point, like that is not a significant amount of money to move the needle.
Not anymore, right?
Yeah, like at all, yeah.
Not at all, but the numbers do keep accelerating. Remember I was talking about that snowball. Yeah. Like if you make Bitcoin $100,000 today, all of a sudden, you know, but then you get used to that amount, then you're not really... It doesn't move the needle for you anymore. You know?
So how should somebody reframe their mind when it comes to money? Because I feel like money is a taboo thing to talk about, like for everybody, especially here in the Rio Grande Valley.
You know, one thing I've noticed is everybody talks in billions now. And it's kind of crazy because you go out, how many billionaires are there?
There's quite a few actually now. Yeah.
3,000 in the world, 600 in the U.S. That's it. People should recalibrate their mind to think in millions still. Mm-hmm. Because there's very far few between billionaires in this world. Like you still got to don't even think about millions. Think about 100,000 blocks, right?
Yeah.
Like I said, once you make the first one, it's easy to make the second one. Once you make the second 100,000, it's easy to make, you know, do it again and do it again. Don't be thinking about going from zero to a billion, because that's where people get strung up and they want to go faster than they're going.
Yeah. And it takes time.
It takes time and you do it in increments.
Yeah. I think one of the things that where the billions came in for my mind when it switched is when I started seeing billions in Bitcoin. It's like the amount of liquidity in Bitcoin is quite significant. And for somebody to take out 2 billion in Bitcoin is not going to do anything to the market. That's when I started thinking, is like, shit, like, these billions in this area aren't that much.
No, I mean, people talk in billions, but when you think about it, I mean, you know, 400 million people in the U.S. and only 600 billionaires.
Yeah, wow.
That's not that many.
No, it's not.
So we got to, you know, recalibrate our minds, think in steps that we can, goals that we can accomplish.
Okay. When you think about that, when you talk about like the goals, like what is your goal process? Like what are you writing down things? Because I feel like for me, when I tell people, like I write my goals down and then I write the list of things that I need to do that day, because I need a list to get through, right?
You know, I see your notebook there.
Yeah.
And I work the same exact way. I have a notebook and I write down what I have to accomplish this week or, you know, this month. And I write down my list of things to do. I get a sense of accomplishment by crossing it out.
Right.
Like doing things. You know, I feel like if I can go to the office and get one good thing done a day, one or two good things done, I feel good about it. Right. And so you're always just kind of pushing forward. But that's exactly how I work is I won't remember everything I need to do. Because you have so many things. You just write it down and you mentally look at it and you're crossing it out.
Yeah, it's interesting, too, because I have, like, family members on my list that I call. I put it on there for a reason because, you know, you get busy with life and everything, right?
So and you forget to call.
And I forget to call. Yeah. So it's like I make it a priority. It's like if you're on the list, you're important, all right? So yeah. It's a cool thing. I mean, I think great. Some people think, like, it's dumb. It's like, no, I mean, it keeps me in contact.
I've been doing that since I could remember when I first started business. And it helps. It helps you. It gives you daily reminders. I need to get this done. I need to cross this off my list. And for me, it feels good.
Yeah.
Knocking things
out. It gives
you
a little dopamine hit.
Yeah, right?
Yeah. Done. All right, I'm done at 2 p.m. Out of here.
Right? That's then a cool go thing. Have fun.
Then
right?
go have fun. Yeah, your list is over, man.
That's right.
Let's talk about when it comes to real estate investing for like newbies for me, right? I'm coming from like the Bitcoin world where I have some cash, right? What are the first steps that I need to do to even like start looking at real estate? Like I'm completely new to this. Like what do I need to do to get into real estate?
It's really not that difficult. The easiest way is residential rental properties, whether it be single family or small little a condo. Those are some of the best ways to get your feet wet. There's a big craze down here with fourplexes right now. Mm-hmm. I don't know what's happened to that. That's blown up. That's also, it's very accessible to people. You get in and you're all of a sudden you're a landlord. You're in the real estate game. And whether it's, you know, small residential properties or fourplex, and that helps you, that's a conduit to grow into the next one or into a bigger one, right? Whether you're going to maybe the next one's an 8-plex or a 12-plex or, you know, and that's how you have to start someplace.
Right.
Start someplace and you start looking around. You try to find something that don't go looking for a steal. Everybody, that's a big common mistake. Is I want to go look for a steal. You're not going to find, sometimes you will, but generally you're not going to find a steal. Just look for something that's a fair deal and try to enhance value on it.
Is there a lot of competition in there?
In which area?
Like the residential, the single residential, the duplexes, fourplexes.
You know, in the fourplexes, that market got, it's still selling like crazy. Oh. The rental market really spiked over the last few years. Every market just about in real estate spiked. So I know inventory on the residential market really was depleted. There wasn't really much to buy, so yeah, it got a lot more challenging. What you're seeing today with these higher interest rates is there is more inventory out there. There is opportunities. Once again, they're starting. You're starting to see some opportunities. You're not going to see any steals though. That's just not going to happen. But I mean, you know, the fourplexes, buying some and building them yourself, I think you can get some. You get some upside there because you build the value.
Right.
You build a unit. All of a sudden, when you build it, you got some instant equity already in the game.
Let's talk about helps. Yeah, absolutely. Let's talk about hiring the right people. Like for me, as a business owner, it's always hard. And I think finding like business owners that I talk to all the time is like finding the right team to help you build your business. Like, what do you look for specifically when you hire on people?
And the first one. Besides everything else, character. That's the first thing you look for. No matter their skill set, I'm very careful about who we're bringing to our team because you bring one bad apple into the team, it disrupts the rest of the organization, disrupts the teamwork. Mm-hmm. And I got a great team right now. We have an awesome team. So, yeah, character, and then you look at their skill set. Another thing we look at, and this is something that I look at personally, is how long, whenever I get resumes, people have held, you know, 10 jobs in 3 years, I'm automatically discarding that resume. If you can't hold a job, a that says something about you.
Yeah.
So that's one important factor. It says a little about whether, you know, whether you're going to stick around and whether I don't want to, my objective is not to give somebody an education and then leave and use it someplace else.
Right.
We want them to stick around.
I got you. Okay. Before we finish off the podcast, in all your accumulated knowledge over the past years that you've been in real estate, what is the best piece of advice that you can give somebody that's getting into the game?
That's getting into the game? Again, get obsessed with it, man. Dude, start studying and don't stop. And sometimes you just have to take that leap of faith, kind of like I did. It made sense to me. Find something that makes sense to you. Study it. And some people just have cold feet before they even do something. And you got to just do it. Sometimes you just got to just
jump in.
Just jump in. The water's warm. Yeah. Sometimes people just get that cold feet and they get intimidated by the numbers. They get intimidated by the deal. Sometimes you can't be scared.
Yeah, at the end of the day, it's just money, right?
It's just money.
You make it again. No, I think that's one of the most important things too, is like with skills, like specifically with skill sets. That's one of the things that people can't take away. Like your job, you can lose your job, you can go anywhere, but you can't take away your skills.
You're absolutely right.
And your learning ability to be able to learn stuff. Like, I think that's one of the most important things as a skill for business owners, like especially for business owners. Like they need to keep learning and doing stuff. So Shavi, I appreciate your time, man.
Yeah,
anything else you want to say before? Like pitch it, man, because that's a beautiful place, bro.
I'll let my work do speak it for me.
Awesome, man. Well, thank you guys. I'll see you next time on the sesh. Peace.